This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jump jockey Graham Waters. We're on the cusp of Far Hills. Explain to people out there what Far Hills means to American steeplechasing.
Far Hills to American steeplechasing, I mean, it's our Cheltenham Festival, you know, one day racing, some of the best purses, all the best horses going for a very, very tough and fair racetrack.
Yeah, it's one of those racetracks. So I travel a lot and I say there's some racetracks on them, you maybe don't want to come to, but Far Hills is one you can stand up and be proud of.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it's nice on a good horse. You wouldn't want to ride a bad horse around it. You know, you'd be, you know, the hurdles down the back, you're jumping slightly downhill, they kind of get away from you. If you're on a horse that's not traveling forward, they tend to kind of, you know, miss out and not really take the hurdles that well, but definitely a lovely track and very, very fair.
First time I was there as a kid with my father running horses, first time I rode a race there was a pony race in 1983. Talk about, you know, a wide-eyed, like, wow, welcome to horse racing. What was your first experience at Far Hills?
My first experience, I actually didn't have a bad day. I had three rides for Cyril Murphy and Irv Naylor and finished third on all three of them. So it wasn't a bad payday and kind of, I actually have memories of that day coming away thinking, you know, three thirds, how bad was that? And then I kind of, that evening, I just sit and look at the results and what did I finish third to and realize, hey, they were $100,000, $150,000 races, you know, and it was actually a pretty, pretty good day out for the horses.
Yeah, this American steeplechasing obviously pales in comparison to Irish and British steeplechasing, but this is a championship day where you can be very proud and competitive, good, sharp racing that you can be proud of.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, we'll know more tomorrow, and it's a pity there's small fields all day tomorrow compared to previous years, but definitely not lack in competition.
Yeah, take us through your ride the first five races. Obviously, the big one, snap decision in the Grand National four-horse race. What are your initial thoughts going into that race?
My initial thoughts is when I look at going to Egbu Base and look at the prices of the horses, I think they don't realize how competitive I think that race is. I think all four of those horses could be odds on. I think you'd put a line, you know, you couldn't put a line through any one of them there. I think that's going to be a very, very competitive race.
How tough is it to ride a four-horse race? Is it tougher than a 10-horse race, especially when you're on one of the favorites?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's harder to run into trouble and get boxed in or, you know, get short of room or leave it too late or, you know, things like that. I mean, the only thing is jumping off tomorrow, it's going to be very, very tactical. Lucky enough, you know, we know the Mean Queen, we know what Snap can do. Amshel, I know him inside out. I've won an old Lang on him myself, and I was third in the novice on him a few years back as well there. You know, I think any one of the four can make the running. I think we're just going to maybe look at each other jumping off, and you know, it's going to be very, very tactical early on, but I'm just going to jump off and do my thing and assess it from there.
Yeah, do you have more options than, say, the Mean Queen, Richie Conan on the Mean Queen, or Barry Gianfoli on Amshel, or Davey Russell on Chosen Maid? Have more options on Snap Decision?
I'm not sure if I've got more options. I mean, they're four equally very, very good horses. And with a good horse, you know yourself, you can ride them any way you want. And I think all four of them are very versatile.
Take us to the getting on Snap Decision. I mean, that was a big move for your career. This winter is a little bit of an opening. Getting the call on a horse like Snap Decision, who's arguably the best horse in the country.
Yeah, at the time, I mean, look, he was definitely by far the best horse in the country with the best form and everything. The Mean Queen came and put it up to him at Belmont, and you know, she was very, very gutsy there. But for me to get the ride on Snap Decision was a big decision, or big help for me in my career. It's been, you know, I've been riding 14, 15 years now, and this year's finally kind of came right. I'm riding the best horses for the top trainer, and I mean, Snap tops the pile, and it's just a privilege to be riding them.
Yeah, the race at Belmont, was there little things you can take out of that that maybe, you know, you sit a little bit off a layoff, skip the summer? Are there things you take out of that and say, wow, I can get revenge on the Mean Queen from that race?
There's a lot of things you can take away, and you know, I was lucky enough. The first time I rode him in the Temple Gwatmi, he won, and he won in commanding fashion. Then he went to Nashville, similar scenario. And I think you take a lot more away. You learn a lot more from a horse getting beaten than you do winning. And when he was winning his 9 in a row, you can sort of say he was doing it pretty easy. But, you know, one thing we can definitely take away from Belmont is how tough the Mean Queen is and not to be underestimating her.
Yeah, and is there room for improvement from Snap Decision from that race?
I definitely think he's going to improve from that run. He'll take it well. He wasn't in the form he was going into Nashville. There, he was in tip-top form. But working on the other day, he seems to be back to where he was just before Nashville.
What was his reaction to getting beat? Was that pulling up? Did he feel like, did he seem any different than winning those races in the spring?
He's a very, very intelligent horse, and he definitely knew he was beaten. He didn't like it.
Well, if we get revenge in the Grand National. Take us back to the beginning, growing up in Ireland, wanting to be a steeplechase jockey. I mean, like for me, people always ask me, how did you become a steeplechase jockey? I'm like, well, I grew up in a family, did it. It made perfect sense. Outside a steeplechase family, it doesn't always make a lot of sense. But for you, how did you get started in steeplechasing?
Well, I don't really have any family in horses. I just always loved horses and started riding in Ireland in terms of, you know, age. I started late at 8 or 9 years of age. And just started riding ponies and just started getting the hang of it and loved to go fast, and horse racing was always the option. Show jumping and stuff was too slow for me. So when I was 15, I was finally old enough to leave school. So I was gone and I moved way down to the south of the country, down to a guy who actually rode over here over timber. I don't know if you remember, a guy called Enda Bulger,
sure, of course.
Cross-country specialist in Ireland. And I spent a year or two with him and learned how to really jump horses and do all that. And then I ventured, I spent a few years pint to pint in Ireland and learned the ropes there and rode plenty of winners and, you know, learned how to ride young green horses and things. And then I moved to the north of England and rode 50 or 60 winners over there. And then ventured on down the south of England to kind of further my career. And it just got very, very tough as my claim was going out. And we got wind over here that Paddy Young was looking to retire, which he was for a few years. He was training and riding, and you know, it's very, very tough when you're trying to do that. And he was looking for someone to replace him, and we decided to come over for a couple of weeks. And it was the weekend at Radnor. Unfortunately, Paddy got the fall, and I picked up the spare rides for Paddy and Leslie that day, and was lucky enough to win my first Grade Three that day on I can't even remember the horse now, Jamarjo, yeah. For the Nailers, and you know, it was a great experience or a great time in America. So we went home that summer, and we got the first day we arrived home, we started work on the visa, and we were back here 3 months later, and that was that.
And good decision?
Yeah, great decision. I mean, it was a fantastic lifestyle over here. You know, it's when I was in England, I was driving 60 or 70,000 miles a year, all out of pocket, you know, with the fuel prices and everything there. I mean, there wasn't much left for anything really. You're winning £1,000 races and things, and when I came here and seen the prize money, it was a no-brainer. You know, unfortunately with COVID and all that with Far Hills, you know, the prize money severely reduced, but still fantastic purses nonetheless.
Yeah, here you can actually have another life too. I mean, you can ride races on the weekend, and it's not the grind like Ireland and England where you're going every day up and down the country trying to eke out a living, I guess.
Yeah, it was very hard, you know, trying to plan anything in Ireland or England. You're racing 360 days a year when there's a 2 week break in England, but there's horse racing in Ireland. So you feel like you have to be doing one or the other, you know, getting on the boat, going over, back and forth. Here, the seasons are, you know, we've got a little bit of time in the summer to, you know, enjoy things like that. And in the winter, we all know it's a long, cold winter here in Maryland, but we get through it. And, you know, there's definitely Monday to Friday in between racing, you can just have a normal life, go out for dinner and do things like that. And then, you know, as soon as the entries come out Monday night, you're sort of thinking about the following weekend. And all of a sudden, you know, the start of the season, it's mid-March and you're racing away, and all of a sudden then you know, you realize it's coming into November and it's nearly coming to an end.
Yeah, it goes fast somehow. It's March to November, so it goes fast.
Yeah, it flies. Look, the summertime was, this summer was very, very busy for us in the jump race in between Colonial Downs on a Monday and then 700 miles north of that on a Wednesday or Thursday up in Saratoga. But you know, we made it work, and we had good fun doing it, and it was a privilege to be up in Saratoga and Belmont.
If you didn't come to America, would you still be riding in England?
I think definitely, yeah. Still be riding away. To what level, I don't know. You know, I was riding away in the north of England, and there's still guys that I still keep in contact with most days. And I think, you know, a lot of guys, Sean McDermott, Willie McCarthy and all that back, you know, they used to go home in the winter. And I've looked at it and weighed it up, and it's very hard to kind of make it work financially. You know, you got to factor in your prices, your flight prices, and then licensing and everything like that. So I sort of worked out, you need to have 20 rides over there to be able to just pay for the journey home, which is not easy to get over the course of 2 or 3 months. But this winter, I'm heading back. With COVID, we haven't been home in 2.5 years. So we're, you know, heading home this winter, and I'm going to bring the racing gear and sort of spend a couple of months riding and see how we get on.
And back at it, huh?
Yeah, back to some old familiar tracks. It'll be interesting to get back racing on deep or heavy ground and sort of test my fitness, you know, and when you get used to riding on good ground over here, horses travel and horses jump. I don't know how I will be pushing one for 3 miles.
Yeah, how big of an adjustment was it to come here and ride here compared to Europe?
I think a lot of guys struggle in the same way. England is very, very fast paced. You know, it's very Martin Pipe-esque mentality. Jump off, be handy, go as hard as you can, best horse wins. You know, it's an absolute, every class 5 race is an absolute grind to win, war of attrition. And I think you get in that mindset as a rider, if you're not in the first 3 or 4, you're tailed off, you know, it's not happening. And you can see a lot of the guys come over here, and I made the mistake as well for, you know, a good year and a half of being too handy, getting there too soon, taking it up 4 out, kicking on, you know, and it's a style of race, and not only the American horse as well has a big factor into it. You know, they like to be covered up. They like to travel. They like to jump. And it took me a while to kind of figure it out. And it's funny, you can't really tell anybody when a new guy comes over or whatever, you want to say to him, hey, you know, but it's just one of those things you have to just sit back and just figure out for yourself. And I wanted, at the time, I remember thinking, God, it was a year and a half before I figured it out, but I can still see guys now that have been here longer still making, you know, same mistakes, and your old habits are still there. You still, you know, when you're jumping 4 out and you're you want to take it up and kick on, but you know, just from recent experience, you just have to tell yourself, just wait.
And that experience has to help when you get an opportunity like riding Snap Decision, I guess.
Yeah, Snap is definitely a horse that likes to travel. You know, he's a gutsy horse. He tries very hard. So when you get stuck into him, you know, he's already giving you 110%. So he's definitely a horse that likes to sit and travel and jumps a lot better when you're keeping a hold of him, you know, riding with plenty of leg and keep your hands as quiet as possible. He's definitely a horse that likes to do that.
Did you ever get an opportunity to ride a horse like Snap Decision in Europe, or is that he's the best you've ever ridden?
He's a different type of horse. I've always, any good horse that I've had in my career was a 4 mile chaser. I mean, I've only ridden 2 big winners in the UK. One was the Eider Chase. It's a 4.25 mile chase with 28 fences in February. It's bottomless ground. I think it took like 9 minutes. You know, and different type of horse. Slow, like I said, pushing them for 3 mile. My other biggest winner was the Summer Cup at Uttoxeter, which is one of the biggest jumps races in the summertime in the UK. And again, that's 4.1 mile. And the horse I won on that was called Dropout Joe. He ended up going on to the Aintree Grand National the following season. And again, that was like, you know, 25 fences. You know, I never had a horse like Snap that, you know, a sharp 2 mile or 2.25 mile hurdler that travel and jump, you know, but he's a different experience.
And for the Fanticipate question of the day, who is your biggest fan in your career now or growing up or in your career? Who's been your biggest fan?
I don't really want to say because I'm riding again him tomorrow. It's Davy Russell. He's one of those guys. It was just a funny scenario for me where I came to America and kind of forgot about him. I always idolized him, always loved him, and he's an absolute gentleman as well. He's one of those guys that always does interviews, says whatever is on his mind, a bit controversial. But then when you meet him, he's the exact same person. But I remember idolizing him my whole career and then kind of forgetting about him a little bit when I came to America because the style was a little bit different. And then he came to Far Hills and I remember going down to the first hurdle and he was on my inside and just looking across and just kind of getting this flashback of like, how good is he? You know, and he's definitely a rider I've always idolized.
Yeah, he's one of the greats. I mean, so quiet, so patient, that empathetic, unbelievable style. When you see, you can go through a race watching him at Cheltenham, you kind of pick out Davy Russell and judge the race on where he is in the race as far as the pace goes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, I've been obviously studying Chosen Mates for him all week and looking at him, you know, when he went on him at Cheltenham in the rehearsal chase and, you know, 20-odd runners at 2 mile, you know, around Cheltenham's very, very sharp. And to see how much confidence he has in a horse sitting fourth or fifth last and, you know, travelling still 9th or 10th coming down the hill and, you know, still fourth or fifth jumping the second last, you know, and just a very, very cool rider. He always knows how much he has underneath him, you know, and a very, very clever guy as well. He's been through a lot in his career in terms of, like, he had the number one job for Giggenstown and he lost it and, you know, he didn't throw the ties out the pram. He kind of kept plugging away and ended up sort of winning all the big races for Giggenstown anyway, even though Brian Cooper was choosing the wrong horse and things like that. You know, just a lot of things like that. I always look to him and in his career and take a lot away from it. And I think you can apply that to any sport.
Yeah, what was his line? Don't get bitter, get better.
Exactly.
That's Graham Waters. I'll tell you what, if you win 2 for me tomorrow, I'll be your biggest fan.
I'll be trying, don't worry.
That's Graham Waters.